Welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World. He's Landon, I'm Jim, and our show is brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. You want to get a great deal on a Honda? Check them out. They have their showroom on West College Avenue in State College with some absolutely great deals, great interest rates on the 2024 Ridgeline truck, also on the Accord Hybrid, and also they got a great selection of Honda certified used vehicles. Check them out. If you can't make it over right away to the showroom, online, Bobby Rahal Honda of StateCollege.com. Landon, how are we doing this week?
Jim, doing well. I started intensive Spanish here at Penn State. And for those of you that don't know, I figured this is worth sharing because many athletes, I'm in the class with many basketball, football players is normally what you see. But most courses require language credits and most people just fall into that Spanish, going to Spanish. That's what they've always done. So I am currently just started. It's about 3 weeks. It's 3 weeks long and it is every day from 8 a.m. till about 12:55 p.m. So you're in there for almost 5 hours just having Spanish thrown at you, just constantly. You got 2 hours of homework afterwards. So I'm a little bit cranky. I was excited to get on the show and let some energy loose, but I'm in my house going a little crazy. But I just figured I want you guys to know that a lot of the athletes, they suffer through some intensive language where they have to sit there for 5 hours every day because it's just more conducive for the schedule. Language is a very heavy credit load. It takes a lot of work to study for. So you kind of put it all up, knock it all out in a couple weeks, Jim. But it is not fun at all, especially being on day one here.
Impress me with your Spanish.
Jim, I don't even have anything. Let me see. Mi amo Landon. There we go. That's like, I think that's day one, Spanish one.
Well, how about I give you a Spanish sports story?
What you got?
Okay. You know, I'm a New York Mets fan, right?
Yeah.
Early on when they first came out as an expansion franchise, back then, early 60s, you had the expansion draft. You were awful, okay? You were awful. You couldn't sign free agents the way you do now. You were just awful for a while. So there were a lot of funny stories about those early Met teams. One of them was pop-up goes into like no man's land between the second baseman, shortstop, center fielder. The center fielder's running in, yelling, I got it, to yell off the infielders. Mm-hmm. Boom. Shortstop runs into him, Spanish-speaking shortstop. So the center fielder goes to one of his Spanish-speaking teammates who also speaks English and says, how do I say I got it in Spanish? And it's yo lo tengo. Mm. So next time, same kind of play happens. He comes running in, calling off the infielders, yo lo tengo, yo lo tengo, yo lo tengo. Boom. The English-speaking second baseman runs into him.
That's interesting. I've always thought about that from a standpoint. I don't know if you remember the NFL commercial. There used to be a fullback on the Seahawks that was deaf, and they had a commercial where it was like him in the stadium, and it was how he would get the call in the game. And it's like really interesting. You don't ever think about those any type of people that have that barrier, not only having to learn the game of football, but learn it in a kind of a different language or in a different way. It's definitely adds an extra element of toughness for sure.
It does. Now, there's so many Hispanic baseball players, but I think some of baseball is the language or the words or things that you use in baseball. Like, who knows if that Met story I told you was actually true. I think Spanish-speaking players understand. I got it.
We could go with a classic me, you. I mean, that's what we did in football. That was easy. I think most people can understand that one. But hey, I'm not a coach.
But you know what? It doesn't take away from this story. Again, as a Met fan, those were those early years, and there were a lot of stories like that. So, all right, Landon, let's move on. And you know, we are going to start with, guess what time it is?
It's time for Landon's Stat of the Week.
I love it. All right, so this one, we're not going to the sports world. I saw this and I figured this had to be shared because I just thought it was so fascinating. And with everything that's been going on recently politically, well, I think this is a very interesting stat to give. So the names Biden, Bush, and Clinton, those names have been on at least one side of the ticket every single year since 1989 for the presidential election, Jim. So I will start out. We'll go back to 1989 when George Bush Sr., he was 89 to 93, served one term. Then we had Clinton from 93 to 01, serving two terms. Then we go Bush again, obviously Bush Jr., from 01 to 09, technically. Then Barack came into office, but Joe Biden was on that ticket. Obviously, there's two people on each ticket, the vice president. So Biden was on that ticket. Then we go to – he's on there for 8 years. Then we go to 2016, and then there is Hillary Clinton. And then we go back to 2020 again, Biden again. So up from 89 to basically what we thought was going to be up to even this year, there was at least a Biden, Clinton, or Bush person on the ticket, which I just thought was pretty amazing. Three families are on a ticket from 89 until basically the mid 2020s. I don't know. I find it interesting. Then it's like, how much nepotism really is there just in all the politics?
Is it? Well, what does that tell you, Landon, that there with that many, that few families dominating politics for a while? What does that tell you? You're a young man, you're 22. You've only been an adult for a few years following anything political. What does that amazing fact tell you?
A lot of nepotism is passed. Well, power is passed around by nepotism, Jim. I guess that's where I'll leave it at. It's clear that there's, I mean, just like, hey, you look anywhere. I've seen this, the conversation. We have this conversation looping it back into sports with like Bronny James and stuff, where, you know, obviously him being drafted to the Lakers, signing a $6 million guaranteed deal, and it showed the same person that got drafted in his slot the year before signed like a $700,000 two-way deal. Bronny gets $6 million guaranteed. You know, you look at the Cowboys front office, there is just bunch of Jones, all embedded up in there. So, hey, it happens, but I would say I would like to see, I mean, we're naming entertainment things. I would like to know that our government isn't made up of that, but guess what? I guess it is. That is the reality of it, Jim.
Well, here's the thing. You mentioned, you know, from like 1988 through today with those three families, but in politics, it's nothing new in this country for families. You and I, we started to talk about this before the show with some of the facts that I asked you how many father, son, or family groups there were that were presidents. And the obvious is Bush and Bush Jr., HW and W. But the second president of the United States, Landon, was John Adams.
Mm. You should have quizzed me, Jim.
All right, we're good. After you're done with Spanish, you'll be taking an American history class, yeah. Right?
No, I'm going to say please.
John Adams' son, John Quincy Adams, became president.
Jim shared that with you. I appreciate Jim not throwing me under the bus just now. But I will tell you, Jim just shared that with me. And I don't know why I never made that distinction that was his son. But I just thought they added in the Quincy. It was a whole different person, no relation. I guess Adams, just because it's a very popular name. But hey, well, you got to let us know if anybody didn't know that fact. You got to man up and admit to that one. I'm doing it because I have no clue.
Well, what was interesting too, the one, like, I think a lot of people would know Adams and John Quincy Adams, but there was also another in the 1800s, which was William Henry Harrison and his grandson, Benjamin Harrison, were each presidents. I'll bet you there are not many people who would know that one, Landon.
No, look, we just had people tune in and they said, all right, awesome, we're going to hear some sports today. You know, we're giving them an American history lesson. I feel bad for our poor fans, Jim, but I enjoy that type of stuff. I think that's always fun things to know. little party tricks, tailgate tricks, if you will.
Well, I'll give you one more relationship. And I think a lot of people may know this, that Theodore Roosevelt and FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, they were related. Okay, both Roosevelts. Interestingly enough, though, and I don't know if any of the other families have this, Teddy Roosevelt was a Republican, FDR a Democrat.
Okay, there you go. A little bad blood in the family.
little bit of that going on. And the other little known fact is Franklin Roosevelt's wife, Eleanor Roosevelt, she was actually part of the family too.
Okay, that's slightly worrisome. I'm not going to lie. That's a little bit worse. How did they had kids, right?
I believe so.
I hope they came out all right. I heard you. There's got to be enough separation, Jim, for all that DNA to work out all right.
How many they weren't like first cousins or second. How far along in cousins do you have to be where it's okay, Landon?
I never thought we would get to this point in this show, man. I mean, I literally couldn't have even dreamed of this. I do think they say, though, you know what? I'm going to have to look this up. I want to say it's just like third cousins, but we'll check that one in between the break. But kind of to get us through this, and we're going to stay on this topic. We got a minute left. I want to share this, though, that my family's done a lot of tracing, and I have been in the Maryland, Virginia area for a long time, my family. And I'm directly related to Martha Washington, the Custises. They're very, you know, kind of well. Don't worry, I don't have any of that money. Don't try to think that. I don't see any of that they had, but I do have a direct relation to her kids, which were George Washington's stepkids. They weren't actually his kids.
You know what, Landon? I think that would if we're gonna follow through with this family and politics, are we gonna hear Landon Tengwall 2036 for president?
I don't think so, Jim. I think they're, you know, maybe. No, I don't think I'd be a good option. I'll stay here in Penn State and continue to try to give you guys my my best takes on Penn State football and sports and whatnot. I don't know if they need any of that yet. I might mix it up too much, Jim.
Well, you know what? I want to be your campaign manager, Landon.
I feel like you could manage a crisis. Have you ever heard of like Scandal, like Olivia Pope? I'm talking to an audience of probably older dudes. So, we're done with this segment, man. Jim, you got to get us out of here. We're going to talk sports right after this, guys. I promise.
All right. We will get back to sports right after this. So stay tuned.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to Landon and Jim versus the World. He's Landon, I'm Jim. Landon, I tell you what, we went as far astray as we possibly can in a sports show in segment number one. We went from your historic fact about the Bushes, Clintons, and Bidens have been part of every presidential ticket since 1988. Somehow we got, 89 right. is when he started serving.
You're right.
88 is when the campaign happened. And then we got to, in my fault, I had FDR marrying his like fifth cousin. And the question came up, how many cousins away do you need to be before it's safe? So you have the answer for us.
I said I was going to do some research, and that's, you know, we have Google now. We don't have to walk down any library. So that's good. And it comes up. So marrying your second cousin apparently is legal in every single state. And then half of the states, it is legal to marry your first cousin, actually. You know, no shout out, no shade on Alabama there, but they probably make that list. And then apparently the consensus is that it's generally safe for you to marry your third cousin and on, technically. I know it sounds bad, but that's very far away, because I'll just give you the numbers from Google. Apparently, your first cousin, you share about 6.5% of your DNA shared with them. Your second cousin is about 3.1% of DNA shared. And then you start to get in the third cousin, it's like 0.00. So that is a consensus from Landon and Jim versus the world. You may not get involved with your cousin until they are your third cousin or less. That is not any type of advice, I guess, legally. Don't sue me, but that's where we concluded. So, Jim, so now we can get into sports. I'm glad we got that out of the way for today.
We're not recommending any incestuous relationship. We are not endorsing that, okay? Let's make that perfectly clear, not endorsing it. Landon, help me here. Save me here. Where do we want to go in the sports world?
Okay, anywhere but here, Jim. Anywhere, please. I don't know if you got a fun fact. Just take us away out of here, please.
Well, I'm not ready for – well, let's get –
It's time for Jim's historic moment of the week.
All right.
I like it. Came out of nowhere. I wasn't even ready.
Well, let's go down my historic moment. I've sometimes gone down the Penn State historic area, and I realize it's, and I have to remind myself sometimes, Landon, because if I'm old enough to remember something, I can't understand why you don't remember it. But we've had some conversations. I've told you about the 1968 and 69 Penn State football team. Back-to-back undefeated seasons. And in the 69 year, we talked about it last week. That was where Texas, Arkansas called the game of the century. Texas wins. Penn State gave up the opportunity to play Texas because they chose the Orange Bowl instead. Didn't know Texas was going to be number one and choose the Cotton Bowl. Had they known that, but you picked out your bowl game before the season was over. Anyway, with that said, one thing that I recall was just how good those Penn State defenses were on those teams. All right. I wanted the 1969 team. Now, they only played 10 regular season games. And then one, and then the bowl game for a total of 11 games with the bowl game. Do you know how many games they kept their opponent to single digits? I mean, their opponent scored once out of those 11 games.
How many?
7 out of 11 games.
Was one score or less?
Yep.
One score from the opponent or less.
Yep. Two shutouts. Two games where they allowed 3 points and two games where they allowed one touchdown and not double digits in any of them.
And I have a feeling you probably won't ever see anything like that again. Man, you guys must have felt robbed. I mean, absolutely robbed. I'd be curious. I you know, I can't talk to every single fan base, but how many fan bases out there claim championships like that? I mean, I really wasn't following college football long enough back in the day where I even remember teams really getting screwed. I mean, there's obviously we have the playoff committee selection, and there's been some stuff with that and teams that were kind of wronged. But it feels like back in the day, Jim, I mean, it was a whole nother level of just teams getting done dirty. That deserved it.
Yeah, there was reputation, and Eastern football's reputation was not good. Mm. So, you know, Penn State was not going to – get their due credit. And I'd have to go back and look through the years, but there was, for the longest time, you know, Penn State was about the only team to go undefeated, untied, and not win a national championship. And it not only happened in 68 and 69, but it also happened in 73, not to mention their 94 team. So this, you know, going undefeated and not winning a national championship. By the way, I said they had 7 games where they allowed only single digits for their opponent in points. In 68, they did it 6 times. Mm. So in 2 years, what is that, 13 times they didn't allow their opponent to score 10 points.
Wow. I thought the Manny Diaz defense was good.
Those teams, they were spectacular defense. Now, I am going to give you a stat from that 1969 team. Undefeated, okay? The quarterback for that team was Chuck Burkhart, and he was actually the quarterback both 68 and 69. And in 69, it was only 11 games as opposed to 13. He only threw for 800 yards as their quarterback. But here is the statistic that will just – this will blow you away, Landon. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Guess his touchdown interception ratio. How many TDs and how many interceptions? I know you're flying blind here. Just throw out numbers.
Yeah, if he only had a couple hundred yards, I'll say he had six touchdowns, four interceptions.
He had one touchdown pass and nine interceptions.
Clearly, I don't – actually, I was going to say the offensive coordinator, but I don't even think they had an offensive coordinator back in the day. He was calling his own plays, so never mind. He's got no one to blame. I mean, imagine that, Jim. There's no scapegoat of the offensive coordinator. It's like if you're a quarterback, you're getting all the blame of the OC and the quarterback. You called the plays, and then you messed them up too. Guess what? Yeah, buddy, we're coming after you with pitchforks.
Well, I suspect, Landon, whether they were having the calls come in from the sideline or maybe they had them delivered in, you know, alternating, a player would come in. Did you ever have that in your high school or college career where they just send the play in with a position player?
We did do that. That was more little league. I think like in high school is really when everybody, a lot of the higher level teams, and I went to high school, that's pretty good. And we, you know, get a lot of funding and stuff like that, good coaches. And we had hand signals for just the QB. The QB had to give everybody the whole play in the huddle. So I think, and it also depends what, I guess, what type of offense you run. But it seems like, I guess everybody's going to huddle for the most part now. I mean, I guess some people would do sideline signals, but with there was a new ruling that starting this year, you're allowed to basically have those sideline devices, you know, be able to talk to the quarterbacks and their helmet, all that good stuff. That kind of came down because of the Michigan thing. We all know what happened with Michigan last year, stealing signals, Connor Stallions, that whole thing. So the college football, the NCAA, they said, hey, let's just take all that away. We'll be able to have all that communication on the sideline, which I think is interesting. I think it'll present a more intriguing game. There's more ability to adapt on the field when you're able to see stuff on the tablet. Instead of having to wait till halftime to make some big adjustments, it's easier to make adjustments on the go. So I am excited to see kind of what that transition is going to look like. Maybe we see a little bit more, a cleaner style of play.
You think logistically too, it'll just be so much easier to call the plays, just quicker to do it when on the sideline you could communicate directly with the quarterback as opposed to going through the signals and or the signs on the sideline where you have the various players, position groups having to look over.
Yeah, well, there's no the first thing with it is like there's not as much processing. Like we know the plays. A lot of people, anytime you see a player forget a play, it's mainly because he forgot what the signal meant. So let's say, you know, whatever. If I'm going to give you Ram signal, I'm like pounding my head, whatever. Oh, I have to remember that equals, you know, duo, the run play. But if you just have Drew Aller screaming, you know, whatever, if I know it by numbers, you know, 12 duo, 12 duo, you're just 12, 12, 12. Like I'm able to think, okay, boom, I know what that is right away, get down. Because there has been many times where we have signals and there's two signals for a play there's one signal that goes left, there's one signal that goes right, but it's the same play just going one way or the other. And that can get really confusing. You'll mess it up. Guys go the exact opposite way on a play, which most of the time, Jim, does not work out very well. So I do think it's going to be a lot better for the players. I think that guys are going to be able to get on the ball faster. There's not going to be as much waiting around because you got to think, guys, everybody has been doing signals for so long. And some offenses have as much as three signalers at once. But for example, like we have three out there. We're looking at a couple of them. It depends. They'll mix up the shirts. They don't know, you know, who is live. You get told right as the series starts, hey, Green's live. Green's live. That means don't look at the guy with the orange shirt giving the signal. Look at the guy with the green shirt. Then you might mix it up, go back to the orange shirt, say orange is live, because you don't want someone to get a beat on who's giving the real signals. That takes all of it out of it now. Drew will have, you know, a mic in his helmet. He's talking to whoever he wants to talk to. I'm guessing it'll be Kotoneki, and they're able to talk a little bit. I believe it. The mics are still cut off, though, when it hits like 10 seconds on the play clock. They're not able to talk to them after 10 seconds on the play clock and down.
What is the communication then that's going on among the offensive linemen after the play comes in? You've got all that. Now you're down, and you see the center turning and communicating with the rest of the line.
Yeah, if there's not a lot of talking on the offensive line, it's really bad. If you don't hear much, not good news for that running back. I'd be a little panicked. You want to hear great communication, because on most run plays, on pretty much every single run play, barring a couple things, there's going to be some type of double team. So you have to be completely on the same page of saying, hey, you and me are taking this guy and we're going to this, you know, ID, whatever number. You have to know the numbering system and all that stuff. So if that is not understood, you're in a really bad place. And that's the hardest thing about offensive line play is, you know, you got to think a wide receiver can kind of mess up on a route, maybe, you know, catch himself, fix it really quick because he has great speed, great acceleration, whatever. An offensive lineman, if four guys block it up perfect, and let's say the left guard kind of goes the wrong way for a second and then comes back, the defensive tackle splits the double team that you were supposed to be on, but you went the wrong way, and boom, it's blown up in the backfield for a four-yard loss. But it's just because one offensive lineman out of the five didn't do what he needed to do. You got to work together as a well-oiled machine, Jim.
All right, Landon, that's it for quarter number two. Lots more to go when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to Landon and Jim versus the World. He's Landon. I'm Jim. We're talking sports in general. We're talking about the political world. We're talking about marrying your cousin. All kinds of interesting things, Landon. And remember, our show is brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. That's the place with the great Honda deals. It's where I got my Honda CR-V. This month, they have some great interest rate deals on the Ridgeline truck, also on the Accord and the Accord Hybrid, not to mention a great selection of Honda certified used cars with interest rates as low as 0.99%. Yes, that's right, 0.99%. You heard me correctly on that one. Check them out. Showroom is on West College Avenue, or online you could go to Bobby Rahal Honda of StateCollege.com. All right, Landon. Just one question for you as a follow-up. As we were finishing up our last segment, you were talking about, I asked you about the communication on the offensive line, and you mentioned that it's so important on the offensive line to get it right because you don't have time to fix if you make a mistake. And you gave the example of a left guard making the mistake where the other four are doing the right thing and the left guard not. That seemed painfully specific, Landon, that it was the left guard who made the mistake. Am I reading too much into that?
Jim, I like how you caught on to that. I think in my head, I actually pictured a play. I won't describe it because I'll just get really like football nerdy, but I actually pictured a play where I kind of went the wrong way. And then we'll just say it was in practice. I think we'll just go along with that. I, to be fair, I don't think I ever had any like big sacks or like big losses that I gave up. But I do remember, like, I just had that visual in my head going the wrong way and that defensive tackle coming free through the A-gap. Whether the quarterback's dropping back or Nick Singleton has the ball, that's none of that's good, Jim. So yeah, you caught on to me a little bit, man. There's a little bit of personal story put in there.
You know what, Landon? It's interesting to read body language of players. And is it fair, the offensive lineman who either makes the mistake with his assignment or just gets beat and the quarterback gets sacked, it always seems like the guilty offensive lineman is the first guy over to help the quarterback up. And that walk to the quarterback, it looks like the walk of shame.
Yeah, that's the worst feeling, especially when you get whooped as like a tackle too, and you turn around and you haven't even seen him hit the quarterback yet, but you're just watching and there's nothing, he doesn't really see him yet. And then you just watch your quarterback look and he's like, oh crap, boom. I mean, and especially there's nothing worse if he gets like blown up. You got to go over and try to pick him up. But I've seen Jim, I've seen where tackles do that and they don't even go and pick him up. And it's like, oh, that's like a, that's a big, so yeah, if you don't go over and pick your quarterback up after you got them murdered, that's like a big middle finger to the quarterback. And I feel like that's kind of a sign of an offensive line that doesn't take it super serious to protect their quarterback. So it really is. Those little things do matter, Jim, as far as how offensive line goes about protecting their quarterback. But speaking of protected quarterbacks, Jim, I got to give another stat.
It's time for Landon's stat of the week.
I said, I've been seeing too many good ones, man. I can't keep them all piled up, because I was actually going to give this one before I saw that presidential stat, which I just thought was absolutely insane. So I had to share that one, especially with, you know, everything going on, Biden dropped out, all that stuff. I felt it was very appropriate to share that one. Here's a football stat for you. I said, talking about quarterbacks that are protected, Tom Brady. Tom Brady never played a single snap in the NFL while his team was mathematically eliminated from playoff contention. So basically, think about Jim. Think about, I mean, and this guy played for how many years did he play? I mean, he played till he was like 44.
He played forever.
He played into his 40s, right? He was like 43, 40, something like that. So he played, well, I think, well over 20 seasons. He probably like 23 seasons, 22, around there. The fact that there was never a point, I mean, Jim, you think back to those week 16, week 17 games, now week 18 games where your team's out of it. You don't even want to turn it on. You don't know what's, you know, it's whatever. There was never a point in time where the Patriots were out of it. We're out of the playoffs in those weeks 16, 17, 18, or, you know, those late games. They were never once in every single year of Tom Brady's career out of it, Jim. And I'd like to see that. I should have done some more research on that stat. I'd like to see how many times they actually made the playoffs. I don't know how many week 17 games they played in that they end up not getting in. I'd probably guess not many, Jim, because I was a, you know, big-time Steelers fan and Tom Brady ruined my childhood. But I just thought that's amazing. I mean, playing 22 whatever plus seasons and you are never, ever mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. That is why Tom Brady is the greatest of all time, in my opinion.
Landon, that stat seems almost impossible.
I can't believe it. I think of like Big Ben, Flack. I mean, think Peyton Manning, Montana. I mean, like no one comes close to that. Every quarterback's had at least one just kind of down year where their team doesn't do that well. And man, oh man, did Tom Brady never have that?
Well, did he? How many years did he play at Tampa? Just three years?
Was it two or three?
I just brought up his career, and it says 2020, 21, and 22.
Okay, 3 years. That makes sense.
And I'm just I know they won their Super Bowl the 1 year, but I don't know why I thought one of the years that they were just not a very good team, but yeah, they won the division. They were 9-8 and won the division. So that means every snap counted in the regular season. So that still just seems crazy. Like that can't be a real stat, but apparently it is.
I'm sure there's a lot of Tom Brady stats that if you look them up, they are pretty uncanny. But yeah, that's the greatest of all time. That is something, argument I'd like to get into if there's anybody. I'd argue the greatest athlete of all time. Do I think he's actually the greatest athlete as far as physically? Obviously not. But I just talking straight out, just athletes in sports, I don't know, Jim. I mean, that was utter dominance for, you know, 20 plus years that he put on display.
Well, you have to say, you know, I'll express it as, is he the greatest professional performer, professional player? Mm. And I'd phrase it that way. But while we're down this path, just how do you judge this? And I'm kind of stalling because I'm in my head thinking. And obviously it's winning is a big part of that. But if it is, Here's a homework assignment for you. look up Bill Russell and the Celtics and how often he won.
Yeah. I'm familiar. Hey, I'm young, Jim, but I know. I'm not blind, because that's the classic fact where when people talk about how many championships you won, and that's one of the criteria for why Jordan is the best, people say, oh, if you want to go by that, then Bill Russell's the best. I don't know. I figured this would trickle over here, but I am of the thought that Michael Jordan is better than LeBron James. I used to not be. I sat down. I watched like this 30-minute comparison video that really went through the five main categories of what makes a player great and really examined each one. And I came away saying, I don't think it's close. I think Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time, Jim. I don't know. Judging by the fact, like I said, you were born when we were at war with Germany and such, that I figured you'd be of the same mindset that he's the best, but I wanted to get your take.
Well, my initial thought was George Mikan. Look it up, Landon. Look it up. But I understand why young people might say LeBron James. The physical tools he has, just phenomenal. And he's not just – to me, with a basketball player, when you start to see how well they pass or just their vision, setting up other players. And LeBron James can do that, okay? But Michael Jordan just had something extra as a player, something magical to him. Like at the moment, he can just decide, I'm taking over the game. That's it. It's end of game.
I told the story about him having like 12 beers, playing 36 holes of golf and then going out and dropping like 40 that night. I mean, that's just what he did. It didn't matter. But I will say the fact of the longevity of LeBron, that I think he's in year 21, maybe? He's been in there for a while. Yeah, that would make sense because I think he came in 03, I believe. So he should be in year 21. And LeBron very well could be one of the better players on the Olympic team. Like that's, you know, it's you know, he's up there as far as like Anthony Edwards is probably one of the better ones too. But to be that old and you're probably one of the top three players on the Olympic team, the fact that he was able to do it that long just shows, I think it's just cool to show that human body can be pushed to that point and be that great for that long with like that much output.
Well, I'm not a LeBron James guy. I'm not a LeBron James fan, okay?
Right.
But with that said, I could concede how good he is. And I don't watch a lot of NBA basketball at all, Landon. But I will watch the Olympic team. I want to see LeBron James play where he's surrounded by really good players. And I think LeBron will be great in that environment. There's certain players, they were just good on their own. You know, putting talent around them isn't going to change their game at all. In fact, they probably don't fit very well because they're just used to the game just being about themselves, you know, and everybody rotates around them. But I'm anxious to see LeBron James and Steph Curry on the same team.
That is very exciting. I've seen some videos. They look like they're very friendly. They like to be. I mean, hey, that could be fun. My question is, if LeBron, if he goes anywhere outside, I mean, I think he might stay with the Lakers since Bronny's there now. But if he goes anywhere, you think he'd take him with him? A little father son duo deal. Imagine that. Then the nepotism chance would really start coming out, Jim.
Yeah, I don't think he's going anywhere. I think that whole Bronny getting there was all part of a backroom, smoke-filled room deal. So but in this whole argument of best athlete and all of that, when you get a chance, Landon, look up Wilt Chamberlain's statistics, okay? There was a year where he averaged 50 points. Averaged 50 points a game. And that was the year he scored 100 points in a single game. The only person to ever do that. And here's the trivia question for you, Landon, and for our listeners. Do you know where the game was that he scored 100 points?
Oh, man. I'm going to say in Utah.
Utah? How long do you think there's been a franchise in Utah?
Dang, I'm showing. I guess they weren't there. When did the Jazz get to Utah?
Do you know where they were before they were in Utah?
I don't even know. Look, we're just getting a ton of education today, Jim.
Well, first of all, here's my hint for you as we go to break. The name Jazz should give you an indicator. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to Landon and Jim versus the World. Landon, this has probably been our most diverse show ever. We hit everything today, didn't we?
Yeah, Jim, we went from presidential candidates to Dayton Cousins to all the sports from now back until the 50s. I don't know how we could have touched any more topics.
Well, we wrapped this up. You were talking about Tom Brady being perhaps the greatest professional athlete or player, performer in history. And I threw a couple names at you. We talked a little bit about basketball. I think we're both in agreement. Michael Jordan, greatest basketball player ever. But I threw Wilt Chamberlain's name at you to look at some statistics. And there was also, I mentioned to you, he, of course, scored 100 points in a game, only person to ever do that. And here, the trivia question to it is, where did he do it? Now, what should have given you a little bit of an indicator is when I said, where did he do it? I didn't ask who was he playing against, okay? It was against the Knicks, but the game was actually played in Hershey, PA.
Really?
Yes.
What did we? Was there like a nice stadium there? I didn't even know there was. Is it still there?
This was the early 60s, Landon. I'm not sure of all the circumstances. I think it may have just been, hey, we're trying to spread the NBA, get other places to watch. And this was actually when they were called, and this is probably news to you, he played for Philadelphia, but not the Philadelphia 76ers. It was the Philadelphia Warriors at the time. Mm. And that year, he had, let me get this straight, he scored 50 points a game, he averaged, and 25 rebounds.
I'm curious, do you think someone like Giannis Antetokounmpo or Victor Wembanyama, are they putting up those same stats back in those days? Because let's be honest, it was, the joke always goes, Wilt Chamberlain was playing against plumbers, and nowadays, they are what they are.
Well, the argument for the time was there weren't 30 teams, Landon. There were like 10, 12 teams, 14 teams, whatever. So he had to play against one of the top 10, 11, 12 centers in the world every night. Whereas now you might be playing against the 28th best center in the world or 29th. But there is no doubt the athletes are bigger, stronger, faster. And there's no doubt that, and I think you and I may have even seen pictures of, if you look at some of the NBA players and how thin they were, it was like the skinny basketball player is what they were like. They would get beaten to a pulp in today's game by someone built like LeBron James. But my advice to you is when you judge athletes across generations, I think you could only judge them by how they did amongst their peers. Because what you don't know is if Wilt Chamberlain existed in this generation, how much would training methods, the weightlifting, the nutritional information made him even more of a beast than what he was back then?
That is a fair point. Okay, I like that. I'll refrain from doing that because I do think Wilt would, to this day, still be I mean, you watch his highlights, but there, you know, isn't a ton of, but he'll go coast to coast, and what it looks like is like three dribbles. And because there was a long time period, even, you know, after Wilt for 20 years, there wasn't big men. We're not handling the ball at all. But he was one of the only big men I've ever seen up until, you know, the 2010s for the most part, where he just went coast to coast, would take the ball and get loose. You know, looked a lot like Giannis Antetokounmpo, that style of player just banging around the basket. And hey, I think he is definitely in consideration for the greatest all time. He doesn't get talked about enough for his dominance, Jim. I will say that.
And the fact is, over 7 foot tall and thick. Now, you see an NBA player on TV and you'd say, well, they look thin. You know, if you see one of them up close, they're bigger, broader than you think they are, than what they look like on TV. But Wilt Chamberlain, even on TV, he looked thick, and he was. He was big and he was strong. So I want to shift gears here, Landon, and I want to give credit to our colleague Andy Shea on this question. I want to talk to you golf. I know you picked up the game fairly recently, but you're an enthusiastic golfer. And our buddy Andy is actually a very, very good golfer. I golfed with him one time. He's incredible. He is a fantastic player. The ball, such a smooth swing. The ball just jumps off his club, okay? It kills me how easy it looks like he's swinging, but the ball goes. Well, he plays in a golf league, and they apparently, I guess they do it every year, one of their weeks of competing, they have a special round where they call it their three-club challenge, where you have to play the round with just three clubs, and the putter counts as a club. Here's my question to you, Landon. You are in that three-club challenge. What three clubs do you pick?
So I will, and I've done this before. I've seen people actually use the method when they're on the fringe a lot. They'll grab a wood out, and they'll putt off of the fringe. But I would say naturally my instinct would be to go driver, 7-iron, putter. But I would get a little worried there if we're chipping around the green, gym with a 7. I don't know how I feel about that. I might blade one all the way across the green into the other sand trap. So, but naturally, I would have to say that's what I'd go with: driver, 7-iron, putter. Which I think that would be a lot of people's first go to without thinking too much on a deeper level on it.
Well, I think instinctively you're right. That's the way a lot of people would go. And I found it fascinating because I asked Andy, who's a very experienced golfer, what he ended up selecting. Now, I think it also varies a bit with your level of play and what you're comfortable with. So Andy actually did choose like his hybrid, like 7-wood or 5-wood type of club that he could hit off the tee box and still drive it over 200 yards. He could use it in the fairway then also. And then, like you said, he could also use that club to putt with. So that's the downside of using the driver. Other than off the tee box, not a lot of people are comfortable, you know, hitting their driver off the floor there. That's tough to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I feel like if you do that, if you essentially now you have a long range with, you know, you're able to hit off the tee box, draw on a par 5, you hit off the tee box, you hit it again off the fairway. Hopefully you're on the fairway. I will say, Joe, I need to plan around for the fact that I might not be in the fairway. I might need to bring one of my hybrids or something. I don't know. But I like that. It makes it a lot more versatile. And then if you go ahead and do that, if you use that wood to tee off essentially, and you use it on the green as the putter, that free ups another club where you probably still get the 7 because you want, you know, somewhere in the mid tier. But I think then you go and either get you a 56, I would say probably a 56 degree, you know, sand wedge type deal I think that kind of shores it all the way up. So I do. I think I like that. Wood, 7-iron, 56 degree, call it a day. I think you're doing well.
And that's what Andy ended up with essentially. So he could, you hit it where he could get off the tee box, hit it off the fairway, and feel confident enough using that as a putter. He then chose his 7-iron and a wedge to work himself around the greens. He also mentioned to me, and see, this is why Andy is Andy and an experienced golfer. He also mentioned, I think their league plays 9 holes. So he also looked at the par threes and said, you know what? I have to be comfortable with a club off the tee box for the par three. And however, whatever distance his par threes were, he felt comfortable he could hit them with his 7-iron. So Andy's the thinking man. You and I just would go with our quick instincts.
We're just reactive over here, Jim. But yeah, I'm still getting comfortable. I'm still getting used to it. But, you know, that would be something I'd be interested in doing. I wonder if people would tune in to Landon and Jim 3-club challenge. We'll put it on YouTube. See what people think.
Well, we would have to try that. I would, you know what, though? It would be important what course we chose to play, okay? If it were on my home course where I know it very well and I'd have a certain comfort level, that would be different than playing, say, on your home course.
Well, you know, hey, I'm a Mountain View guy over here in Penn State, so we'll see. I can go the Penn State course, Jim. We'll call it even. You've been playing there back since, like I said, the 1940s when you were a young guy. So you've been there for a long time. I don't know. Maybe we'll call it the Penn State course, and we'll see what happens. But either way, if we don't film it, we'll have to make sure we give everybody the. But if we do that, we'll have to film it. I'll bring my cameraman out, and we will absolutely get after that because I think that'd be a lot of fun. But we got about a minute and a half left, Jim. And I just want to share this fun tidbit real quick that I thought was really interesting. And I'm interested to see if we're going to see this at all in the NIL front. Caleb Williams is negotiating his rookie deal, just signed it the other day, I believe. But he was a lot of time and effort put into this. It was reported that his agents are, you know, finding ways to use creative tax strategies from being paid as an LLC to having payments treated also as a forgivable loan. So it sounds like, I don't know, Caleb Williams is trying to do anything under the sun to finagle a couple extra dollars, I guess. But I don't know. He seems very innovative in everything he does. He's always trying to do the next best thing. I did know this for a fact because I kind of knew his dad. I heard that he was trying to negotiate originally the team he was drafted to. He wanted a very tiny chunk of ownership of that team. So, hey, I guess he's finding new and interesting ways to get paid and save a couple bucks, Jim.
And what did the ownership say? Caleb, your labor, not yeah. owner.
Yeah, exactly. They probably laughed a little bit. I'm not going to lie. But hey, for someone who's been, he's always been the number one player, pretty much in one of the number one players in the nation, then in number one player in the draft. Hey.
You know, Landon, I don't have any issue with any employee looking to maximize his revenue. But the one thing about professional athletes, especially someone at the quarterback position, you maximize your revenue by being the best. That's how you become Tom Brady, you maximize your revenues. Patrick Mahomes, that's how you maximize your revenues. Now, he could get a couple extra dollars this way or that. I get the feeling if he goes too far down that path, his fans are going to say, I wish you focused that much on winning as you did making that extra dollar. All right, Landon, that's going to have to be it for Landon and Jim versus the world. Make sure you join us next week.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.